Hello and welcome to Tabletop Game Talk On Topic, a show where we talk about tabletop gaming topics of all kinds. I'm one of your hosts, Josh.
I'm Kitty.
And I'm Chris.
Today we're talking about complicated games. What makes games complicated? Why do some people seem to seek these types of games out? And maybe an easier question to answer, what makes people avoid them? Should games strive to be less complicated? Is complicated a sign of bad game design? Is the answer to all these questions a simple, it's complicated?
Yes. But first, as always, a thank you to our Patreon friends of the show, Emil Jill Jam, George Gia, Adam Harrison, Corey Bell, and the SGC. Huge thank you to all our other patrons as well. And hello, new listeners, if there are any out there.
That was a good speed read, Chris. Were you like challenging yourself to do that really fast?
Well, I took a deep breath. Yes. And the wind just came out really fast.
Wow. Good work.
I need to work on my
pacing. I'm going to start timing you. We get PB together.
You know something? I think we should speed read more of this because people have been telling me, it's like, you know, you guys just take so long to talk. I have to listen to you at 1.5.
You know what? Yeah, but that's technology's there for people. Like, if they want to listen to us fast or if they want to listen to us slow and make us sound really drunk, that's fun too.
I listen to everything, all my podcasts and all my audiobooks at 1.5 now.
Yes.
And every once in a while, I'll slow it down because I'll be in the car and be listening with Sydney or something. I'm like, okay, I'll slow it down. I feel like everyone's talking in slow motion.
Kind of a bit drunken sounding.
But we should do an entire segment in slow motion so people are like, why is this so slow? And then they go back and they try to speed it up and then all of a sudden we're going really fast.
They're going to love that. They're going to love it.
Hi, no, Kitty. How are you?
I'm good. I'm Instagramming the view from Josh's apartment.
Yeah, that's a nice view.
It is a nice view.
Yeah.
It's lovely. It's sunset.
Oh, time of day. The moon's coming out.
We're not facing the right way to see like the whole sunset, but it's a really nice view of the city here.
Yeah. It's a nice evening view. All right. Wait a minute. We're talking about complicated games. Let's see. So feedback on this was good. Or input on this was good. All our input is really good. There's a lot of really meaningful... Meaningful sounds like I'm joking. It's a lot of like insightful conversations.
Yeah.
And I really like the input because I'm like, oh, this is a more complicated subject than I had mattered. We're going to see how often we say complicated.
It's going to be a lot.
This episode.
It's going to be a lot.
All right. Let's start out with a couple definitions and not my own definitions. I think Michael and Terrence did a pretty good job trying to define these. So Michael says complicated is a judgment on how many different rules, mechanics, parts need to be grasped before someone can play the game properly. I like that. Terrence boils it down to a comparison on how long a game takes to learn the game versus how long it takes to play a game. A minute to learn, a lifetime to master is a strategic game. A game that takes a half hour, an hour or more to teach is a complicated game. Both of those have validity. I think that there's exceptions to each of them as well, because sometimes a game just has an overwhelming amount of pieces and things, but when it boils down, the game is actually quite simple. So it's complicated to learn versus complicated to play. And then you also have those games that are like really complicated to play, but really simple to learn. You know, we were talking like chess is one of those things where you could get really into it. Although I would argue that chess is not that complicated, but let's get into that and let's find out. So what do you guys, think of complicated game?
Games? I don't know. I guess, that definitely the rules part of it for me, you know, I guess I like those strategic games like chess where the rules are simple, but it's more how the rules are expressed and evolve over the game that makes it more complicated.
The strategy is complicated.
Yes.
So you can have simple rules, complicated strategy, or you can have, I think the worst combination is a complicated rule set where the strategy is actually really straightforward and you've spent so much time reading the rules then you're like, oh, this is really easy.
Right.
And it's just like complicated for the sake of being complicated.
Right. Yeah, it's just hard to like play a game and like hold so many things like and try and remember so many things. Like at least even with chess, like you think, oh, chess is such a hard game. Well, no, I only have to remember the rule, the way that something moves for like a handful of pieces and that's it. But like with like a heavy Euro, there's like, oh, there's this thing over here and, you know, this vineyard thingy building does these five things and though, yeah, and then there's these other buildings and then, you know, there's these cards you've got to think about and they've all got their own different rules and it's just, oh my goodness.
See, I think it's easy to look at a board and see a bunch of choices that are all like, I can make one of these choices and I'll score points no matter what. Whereas with chess, I am looking at every single piece on that board, thinking of how many ways I can move it and what the outcome of each of those moves would be. And you love that. Mm. And I know you do. But to me, that's just like, I can't. Right. I can't keep that all in my head. By the time I've looked at the last piece and thought it all through, I forgot what the first piece I was looking at would have done. And now it's just like, bah.
So I think what I'm seeing, and just so that the people who are listening can see this, Kitty is sitting to my left, Josh is sitting to my right, and I just ping-pong the entire thing, which I like. You guys need to have more of those interactions. It was quite interesting.
Yeah.
But I feel like this
we
is...
We cut you out.
No, this is perfect. I weaseled my way back in. I feel like this is viticulture versus chess. Neither of which I would consider complicated games.
Yeah, I kind of tried to pick one out of the air. I don't know if viticulture was on that list.
But I think that it's an interesting thing to look at anyway, as we ease into this subject.
Yeah.
Chess is complicated in the number of moves that you can take on any given turn.
Yep.
So when you look at a chessboard, and you know, especially early on, you have a ton of pieces out there. Almost all of them can move, especially once you've broken up the pawns a little bit. And they can move to many, many different places. Like, I don't want to say hundreds, but dozens of different positions. Viticulture, on the other hand, has a lot more things to think about when you're talking about the cards and, you know, your long-term things like that. But there's really only, like, at any given point, six things you could do.
Right.
Which really narrows the focus of how complicated that game can be. But they both have their complexities in their own way. Now, these are not what I would say are stereotypical complicated board games, but they do emphasize that point really well, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I and maybe viticulture was the wrong example. I mean, I'm thinking of a game of games like that where you don't have six choices, but you probably have like 20 or more. And you're just like, oh my God, like, I'm not sure how to build a strategy. And I'm kind of... You know, there's so many different kinds of strategies I could pursue right now. And I have no idea which ones are good, which ones are bad. At least with a game of chess, I'm like, I can work out the strategy, you know, as I go. And it just seems more, I don't know, I'm a bit more laser focused with chess than I am with a game like some big Euro with all these different things to think about.
So, Chris, if chess is not complicated and viticulture is not complicated, what is complicated?
Well, that's...
No, give me a game. I want you to come up with a title because you shot down our choices. Yeah.
Although, don't weasel out of this.
Viticulture. I would say more like Concordia. Viticulture, I thought, was fairly streamlined.
Yes. Yeah.
Castles of Burgundy, I would put more towards the complex. But Concordia, mm-hmm. I would say, was really the Euro game we played that was the most... There is just so much going on this board, but really it boils down to making a choice you can see versus seeing the consequences of the easy choices to make.
Yes.
So for me, a complicated game is something that is not intuitive as you play it. Yes. And the rules can be problematic as well.
Title. Pick a title. Yes. I need an example. Tried to give you time. I'm.
Let's use Castles of Burgundy for a moment.
Okay.
I think it's a common game. A lot of people are familiar with it. It's a Euro game. There's dice rolling involved. There's, you know, drafting of tiles. There's buildings of things. You're trying to create, you know, a lot of different connections on the board as far as like scoring possibilities and such. There are a lot of nuanced rules there, and not a ton, but enough where it becomes complicated simply because the number of rules you need to learn in order to play the game to its fullest is a lot. It's not like with chess, like you say, there's six moves you need to learn. The strategy of chess is a totally different thing. But if two people at the same skill level are playing chess, they don't really need to worry about the strategy so much. They're at the same basic skill level. Yeah. And any given piece you move, you can say, all right, well, I'm going to move this piece. Can it be taken by anything? No. Can my king be taken by anything? No. Yeah. All right, we're probably okay here. And you can play it in that short term way. It's not the best way to play it.
I think that's how like mid level chess players play. I don't think that's how the like expert chess players play.
I think the thing that's coming up in my head right now is like some of these games, a good example would be like Blood Rage. Like when I first started playing that, like I'd draft some cards later on and be like, oh, okay, like if I had been, you know, building this kind of engine, then these cards that come later in the card would be really useful right now to like work into this engine that I had no idea you could even build in this game. And it's like, I feel like there's information that you get even later on and you're like, oh, okay, now I understand a bit more how you can build different types of strategy in this game. Whereas with chess, it's just like the pieces are there, the information's there, no new card's going to come out and like change my mind as to what type of strategy I'm doing.
Okay. I think that there's a gradient here, which is nice to highlight as well. And because when I'm thinking this, I'm like, chess isn't all that complicated. It has a strategy level that I'm not overly thrilled with. I'm like, it doesn't keep me coming back to it. But I understand how some people could, like when I was first learning chess, it was very complicated. I mean, I was like 7 at the time, but it was a very complicated game trying to figure out what everything did. But with like something like Blood Rage, that one doesn't seem very complicated to me, but you are right in that there's a strategy there that isn't necessarily straightforward and streamlined. It's like, yes, for a lot of people, you know, you pick up Blood Rage, like, okay, so, and when I teach Blood Rage, I don't even let people draft on the first turn because it's like something that you don't have enough information now to understand how to draft. So we're just going to make sure the cards are split up evenly. Yeah. So you are right in that I think we have this gradient of complicated. So Blood Rage to you is a complicated game.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of nuance in that game. I don't see it complicated because I say, okay, there is nuance, but how you take your turn is very straightforward. Mm. And I think that's the reason I don't think chess is complicated, is because how you take your turn is very straightforward. But that's sort of the point, is right? It's like this definition of complicated, it is very different for everybody. Yes. So, Kitty, what do you find as a complicated game? Like, what have I made you play where it's like, no, this is just like, yeah.
I think I have a high threshold for dealing with complexity. I don't mind complexity in rules. I don't mind complexity in the number of pieces. I am pretty good at just kind of like, yeah, I can listen and deal with this. And I am good at like kind of picking up those things. What I would put in the complex games I don't want to play because to me they feel complicated, are games that Josh loves. Things like Photosynthesis, where on every turn I have to stop, look at the board, think about my pieces, think about the play, think about my turn 3 turns from now and what's going to be happening then. I don't have the attention span to have that kind of forethought for every turn. I can put in a lot of time into learning how to play a game where my turns don't take that long. So Castles of Burgundy, something which I think you even looked at and said like, oh, this is complicated, I don't want to deal with it. I was able to sit down and learn and figure out, and yeah, sure, I didn't get every rule perfectly, but after playing 2 games, I think I know the rules really well now, and I could teach anyone pretty easily. And my biggest complaint with it now is that the colors are too close together. And I would say that a lot of people would classify that as a complicated game. But for me, it's all about how the turn plays. And sure, when the tiles come out, I might have to go to the back of the book and look at what does this symbol mean. But it's like any Euro game where once you pick up the symbols, once you know what they mean, it's super easy to look at the board and see what's going on. And you just roll your 2 dice and you spend them and look at your board and you have all the time to like see what's happening. And there's only so many choices you can make based on what you roll. And the randomness really allows your focus on there. So it didn't seem super complicated to me.
Yeah, but I don't know. It's like, with especially like, I'll use Scythe as an example. Like when I first played that game, I was like, I don't know what I should be aiming for here. Like there's ways I can get points and that's the overarching goal. But I feel like the goals in a lot of these games feel like really scattered and there's like different ways that I could specialize and therefore I don't specialize in anything. And I keep getting sort of like, almost ping pong between different strategies. Like, oh, maybe I'll just go for popularity right now. And like, oh no, I should maybe try attacking someone. And like, wait, how should I counteract this person's asymmetrical power? And oh, where can I get more points from? And it's just too confusing to me.
Where to me with Scythe, it's you have your player board. You only have like 5 different choices you can make. yeah, sure, maybe one of them might be a little bit better than others, but if you make any one of them, it's not a bad move. You're doing something to move yourself forward in the game. You can't really ruin your game in one turn of Scythe the way you can in one turn of Photosynthesis or Chess, where your one move, that's it. It's over. It's done. You messed it up. No going backwards. Where if you make a suboptimal move in Scythe, you've got like, you know, 20 other moves to make, and you can kind of figure it out as you go. And even if you're not maybe playing the best, it's still fun because you can't see everyone beating you immediately.
I love where this conversation is going. I really do. Like, this is so Aaron Wan actually split this into four different categories. And I think that at first I looked at this and like, okay, yeah, that sort of makes sense. And then now hearing this, I'm like, this makes a lot of sense. Kudos, Aaron. We're going to go over these categories. So the first category is the rules overhead. This is typically where I find complications in game. If I'm opening up a rule book and I see 30 plus pages of rules, I'm like, this is a complicated game. Really what I'm meaning is this is a complicated game to learn.
It doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
Right.
And everyone has their own complicated
and it's so true because when you said that just before, it was like, I immediately be like, yeah, like every time we sit down to learn a game, I can see that Kitty's picking up the rules way quicker than me. And I'm there being like, wait, what? Like, I don't get what Chris is saying right now. This is all going over my head. And Kitty's like nodding and going, yes, yes, that makes sense. And I'm like, oh man. So it's just like, that's where your head's at. And it's just like, totally doesn't jive with me for some reason.
Where we're 10 turns into Photosynthesis and you have like a bazillion points, and I'm like, yeah, I don't even know what I did wrong. Right. I've got nothing here.
Right. Well, all right, so his second point is board complexity.
Yeah.
And this is where you're talking about Scythe.
Yeah.
Where it's like, okay, there may only be five actions I can take, but there are so many ways that can affect the board state. I'm basically like flabbergasted at how much I have to consider when I take this action.
Yeah, I feel like Terraforming Mars can be a lot like that as well. Like, there's just tons of stuff on that board, and I'm like, where am I looking right now? Are we doing temperature? Are we doing lakes? Are we doing buildings? Like,
I'm putting Terraforming Mars into a different category that I'm not sure that Aaron even came up with, which is complication of the iconography symbols of the game.
Yeah.
Where if it is not clear, and it doesn't mean there's a lot of it, or that
but
it's
there
not,
is a lot of it in that
there,
game.
There is a lot of it in that game, and it is not well explained, and it is very confusing. Like, because you can totally, I'm trying to remember what game Chris loves that has like, it's really confusing iconography, but once you figure it out, it's like, oh yeah, this is it. It's like learning a language.
Oh yeah, you spoke about it
galaxy,
recently.
Galaxy, star, or something.
There's cards that may be involved. Well,
so there's a number of different ones. Now you have me thinking, Roll for the Galaxy is the one I'm thinking of, but Race for the Galaxy is the one that's like most stereotypical iconography is crazy type of thing. But the game system is actually really quite straightforward. You just have to learn a language
and
to
once,
play it.
Once you pick it up, it's super straightforward. Whereas Terraforming Mars, I feel like no matter how often I try, I can't pick it up.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is, if it's me, if it's the game, but...
And I will admit that this particular podcast group is in the minority on Terraforming Mars. And if we played it excessively, this would not be an issue. Iconography would not be a problem. It's just that game is not compelling enough for me to keep going back to. Again, probably because I haven't played it more than like a half a dozen times.
Seems very busy though. There's tons of different stuff on the board there. There's like a thing with the moon, and then there's some stuff at the bottom, and then there's like the main Mars map, but then even on the main Mars map, you can put different things on there.
Also, you have like six different kinds of cards you can buy, and there's the price of the cards and the resources of the cards, and they're not the same thing, and it's, But go on. What are some of Aaron's other...
So the next one is depth of strategy. Now, this is where we get into Photosynthesis.
Yes,
and Chess. Where Photosynthesis is a very, very straightforward game to learn.
Yeah.
Yep. I think there's three actions. Like, those are your three actions. You're trying to get sunlight. Boom, done, ready, go. The board state complexity isn't actually that overwhelming. It's a relatively small board. There's a little bit there, but it's really the strategy of where you put your seeds and how you grow your trees.
Where the sun is now, where it's going to be when it hits this, and...
which exactly, which can be like, and that's a completely separate type of complication. And the fourth one he has here is the metagame. And this, I believe, is more specifically for what happens outside of playing the game. This is your deck building games, your Magic the Gathering, your Game of Thrones,
your Arkham Horror. Could poker be thrown into this? Do you mean like, because like, I don't know, playing the player instead of playing the cards?
Yeah, I would put a lot of gambling games in this where you're, or anything where you're trying to kind of guess what your opponent's going to do and try to counteract that move.
Also, you need to, in poker, you need to know like pot odds of like, you know, I've got an ace king, like what's the percentage pot odds of that winning any given hand? And, you know, and what other cards are, and then percentages to do with what's out there,
which
as
well. which is certainly part of the metagame as well, and I think part of this too. But like, if I'm going to play Magic the Gathering, I need to create a deck that's competitive,
right?
So there's a, and there's thousands, literally thousands of cards for me to choose from, right, to create a 60 card deck. Yep. That is incredibly complex. Now, if you're into that world and you are following that and you've decided, okay, I'm only going to pay attention to the last 2 years or whatever the case is, you can limit that complexity a little bit. But there is a lot of complexity there. You know, I've mentioned before, Sydney and I are starting to play the Game of Thrones card game. And we were using pre-built decks for the most part. But we now are dipping into creating our own decks, which adds an entirely new layer of complexity to the game. Already that game is complex because even though the rules are straightforward, every single card has some kind of special ability and some kind of interaction that can happen and change the game and the board state. So this game is relatively easy to learn if you're being taught, but very complex to play as you're trying to figure out, wait a minute, what does that do again? And you have, what, you have six different characters over there. All these different cards do things. All my cards do things. I need to read all of these and then keep that all in my head as I decide what to play next. There is a lot there. It's not a simple, like, straightforward game. Unlike something like, what I hope, which is Keyforge, which I'm calling an entry-level deck building game, where there is no metagame. They remove the metagame. You still have rules on the cards, but they're a little bit more straightforward. So like, it lowers that complexity, lowers that entry point. I like looking at complexity in these different things, though, because different people have different thresholds in each of these categories.
Yeah, as we're seeing between me and Kitty right now. Yeah,
and even Chris.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because yeah.
You like all the really complex ones, I feel like, or at least
he likes the complicated gameplay. I'm putting Arkham Horror in this, yeah, where the game itself is the complicated part. The rules are complicated, yes, but it's more the gameplay is where the complexity happens.
Right. Yeah, and now we have to be careful when we say Arkham Horror. I'm going to say, typically, we're talking Arkham Horror, the living card game.
Yes.
If we're talking Arkham Horror, the board game, we'll say specifically Arkham Horror, the board game. Speaking of Arkham Horror, we have a couple input on that. Todd mentions, he says, I think there should be a distinction between complicated rules and complicated strategy. Go and chess are rather simple rules-wise, but can literally read a book about the strategy of them. And you read multiple books on the strategy of them. Whereas, and he says, I'm going to pick on Arkham Horror. Arkham Horror has a seemingly complicated rules, but not sure it has a strategy. All I got out of the game was, I move here, how many dice do I roll, repeat, until the end of the game for 5 hours. Now, this is Arkham Horror, the board game, probably second edition. I think third edition just came out. I am not a fan of Arkham Horror, the board game. And I do think that that can be problematic. Melissa follows up with this saying, I feel like I've never been able to quite put my finger on what I don't like about Arkham Horror, the card game. But this may be it. I don't mind complex strategy or even complex rule systems. I think that I enjoy figuring stuff like that out. But the problem with Arkham Horror, the card game, is that I read the rules and spent a lot of time figuring out what was going on, but there wasn't much payoff in the strategy department. I think that after all that time reading and figuring, I was expecting more from the gameplay. Now I'm going to be a little defensive, Melissa. I love you. You're fantastic. But Arkham the Living Card Game is the most amazing thing ever. It is
Reading the rules.
It's my number one favorite game right now. Bar none. It beat Gloomhaven as far as number one. But what? I will tell you, it is a very complicated game. And for the reason that Kitty said is it's really hard to learn the rules to that game.
Right.
You have two rule books. You have a learn to play, and then you have the rules reference. And that's Fantasy Flight's kind of standard thing. The learn to play is meant to be able to walk you through the game. This is how you play it. We're going to teach you how to play it. Hold your hand. And then when you come across issues, you can go look it up in the rules reference. Once you're used to that splitting up of responsibilities, it's not too bad. Like, you're like, okay, I know how I'm going to learn this now. I'm just going to go through this. I'm not going to worry about asking any questions as I go through the play. The card game, though, when you look at the base box, you play the first game, it is a tutorial scenario. It pulls you, here's this, now we're going to teach you this, now we're going to teach you this, now we're going to teach you this. It is dull. It is boring. It doesn't really show off the gameplay when you're doing this. When you go to the second scenario, it is overwhelmingly difficult. You fail almost immediately. There's no way to win that scenario. There's no way to achieve the objectives of that scenario. You're always going to lose in some way. It's just this shades of gray thing. And that can be really, really discouraging. And then you're like, whatever. And I'm done. And that's exactly what it was for me until finally I'm like, all right, I'm going to try this again. I think what I ended up doing was just building decks that Fantasy Flight had given me. I got a group of people together. We went through the first one. We went through the second one. We went through the third one. We just forced ourselves to play through it. And now I'm hooked. This game has every level of complexity, though. Rules, crazy complex. Board complexity, there's a lot going on. All the different cards are doing something. There's monsters on there. There's different things. The one thing I do like about this is, unlike most co-ops, the board, like the upkeep of the board that you do, very, very minimal. So that has the one thing going for it. Depth of strategy, there's a lot of strategy here, but you don't notice it very early on. And then finally, the metagame in this. Building decks is the core awesomeness of this game. Well, the gameplay is awesome too, but the building decks just adds to it. But if you're not into that building decks thing, then yes, the game is just, it's not worth the time for a lot of people. Okay, taking a breath. Sorry, Melissa, just had to go there.
All right. So I have a question that I don't know that you put on here, Chris, which is, when is complexity an asset to a game?
So I don't need to answer that because I think other people have, I think, yes, maybe. Trevor actually said this, and then I'll comment on this. So Trevor says, I find complexity seems to allow replayability. Before you shoot this idea down, I mean specifically allowing replayability through boredom prevention. Expansions also address the boredom aspect of simpler games by complexifying them. He says, his kids love Carcassonne, but without the expansions, the family began to grow tired of scoring in only three ways. Even 10 times in, he was seeing ways to score he hadn't seen before and enjoyed the game, but the family needed to change, to evolve, to grow more complex to keep their attention. So I think that that's one way complexity can help, is it just keeps the game kind of new and fresh, opens up new options and new ideas. You know, Magic, we've used that as an example many times. It is an incredibly complicated game if you take in all of it. It's also a game that is constantly adding and reinventing itself. The core rules are one thing, but it does so much with all of the things that it keeps adding in over time. But it's crazy complex. Like, if you want to jump into it, don't bother building decks. Get a pre-made deck, play those decks, and if you really get the bug, then fine, go ahead and take that plunge, but warning signs, because there's a lot of nails in the bottom of that pool. So, but is that sort of like, that's one reason. Do you have a reason why complexity might be good?
In co-op games, it prevents alpha players.
That's true.
Yeah. Complexity in a board where you have more than one good choice, or there is a difficult choice to make, it means that more people can weigh in on the options, that there's more to do than just like, oh, I see this puzzle. It's easy to solve. I've done it. We should all do this. Let's just take turns being the one to point out the obvious. That's not a fun co-op game. A co-op game where there's three good choices. There's so much going on the board that you have to manage that not one player can really take everything over.
That's a great point.
So more choices. Does more choices always mean more complex? It sounds like a straightforward question. I'm just curious. And it's not a loaded question.
Different kinds of choices create different kinds of complexity. I mean, we already went through this, but you know, there's choices in terms of different types of specialization in your strategy in Euro games, or there's different choices in chess about how you're going to attack your opponent. But I think they're different often. I don't know.
So looking at something like Carcassonne, which can seem like a really simple, straightforward game where you pick up a tile and you put it down and you choose how you're going to score it. But there can also be as much complexity as you want in there as you really like look at the pieces. You know how many pieces are in the bag. You know how many kinds of pieces is. If I put this down, am I going to be able to pull a piece that will connect to it? That can add strategy to what seems like a very simple choice. Where do I put this one tile? Whereas some deck building games, you might have a marketplace with like 12 cards in there, but is this one card I add to my deck really going to make the difference in the game? I can buy any one of these cards. It's just how much money do I have at this moment? I need to pick something up, whatever it is. That doesn't add as much complexity to me, even though you have more choices of what to pick up than maybe you would have. Where can I place my tile?
I think that's a good point. Like, it sort of depends on how meaningful those choices are.
Yeah.
As to whether or not that's adding extra complexity or not. Now, I mean, I'm not going to say that Carcassonne is a complex game. I think that you can add to it. And there's like, I don't know, something like 30 expansions. So you can make it really, really complex. The reason it's a very nice gateway game is because it's so streamlined and simple in its core feel. So I think what Trevor's saying is as you add complexity to it, it stays fresher.
But I like what he said, that he thought it stayed fresh for him. It was for other people, maybe, that, like, I think Carcassonne is one of those games where it's what you put into it is what you get out of it. And you can make it as complicated or as simple as you want it to be, which is why I really enjoy it, because I love the depth. I love the kind of metagame of knowing how many tiles are left of this kind. Am I going to be able to place it? What's it going to be? And somebody else can just pick up their tile. It fits here. I put down my meeple. Turn over. And then you can keep playing with them. And yeah, it might get boring for them. And if you enjoy playing with the expansions and that keeps them involved, then adding that complexity is great. Yeah. But I feel sometimes like the expansions kind of spoil it for me. I'm a purist, but you know, some of them are fun.
Well, and the other thing too is like the people who enjoy Carcassonne, and those people, that's not really what I meant there, but you know, if that is a type of game that you like and you like that level of game, it's at that point, it's not complex. It has just enough strategy for you to enjoy playing it over and over. And then as you add things, you're adding complexity. And that might be what people are really like, oh, this is really, it's okay. It's like whatever. But oh, now you're adding these other things. It's making it a little bit more complex to that level of game.
Because I feel like when we played, I really like just the puzzly nature of the base game. I really enjoy that. But you are not such a big fan. But we added the Princess and the Dragon expansion, and suddenly you were more involved in the game. You had more things to plan out to deal with, more ways to affect player interaction, too, that I think it kept you involved in the game, and it didn't ruin the game for me, so that made it better for us as a gaming group.
Yeah, otherwise I truly do find Carcassonne incredibly boring. But
I mean, the thing that's coming to my mind is the difference between Pandemic and Pandemic Legacy, because, you know, I played Pandemic normal version. I enjoyed that. But I feel like Legacy does add that complexity. You know, it's just, you know, the new rules are coming out every round, and, you know, you're having to really adapt your strategy a lot. And so that really, I enjoyed that. Like, we all like stepped up and kind of like, oh, okay, we've got this new thing to think about, and how are we going to change things? And that really did keep it fresh. So I can see your point there. Like, it does help to keep that challenge there and be like, okay, I'm not bored now because I got a new problem to solve.
And I like that one because it adds complexity in the kind of boiling the frog way, where you're in the tepid water. It's nice. And then you add, oh, just a little bit more, just a little bit more, just a couple rules, just one more sticker. And then all of a sudden, you're playing a really complicated game. And if you try to explain how Pandemic Legacy Month 12 plays to somebody who has only ever played base Pandemic, they are going to be lost so quickly.
Or you're teaching them a completely different game.
Yeah.
Which it isn't if you've gone through the journey.
Yes.
You know, so I think that's interesting. Also, nobody should ever try to teach someone month 12 of Pandemic Legacy because you spoiled Spoilers. Everything.
Spoilers. It's true.
Yes. Chris Anderson says, personally, I think the good complicated games have complex systems that work together to enable ultimate goals. I might spend all night trying to figure out how to play the Roar, but ultimately the system makes sense. And for me, there is fun in determining the method behind the madness. I do not enjoy games that are complicated for complicated's sake. For example, First Martian just seems to me to have a lot of simultaneous things going on that distract from any specific mission. Just keeping track of a dozen different tracks doesn't appeal to me. I prefer to be strategist rather than manager. And I agree.
It's so funny that exact game came up because you really like lost it with that game when you first set that up. I mean, we literally didn't end up playing it because you sort of lost your mind a bit about how ridiculous it was.
Like even Chris couldn't deal with the complexity yeah. of that. And I feel like that game, it was almost like a solo should have been managed by an app game that they tried to turn into a board game. And it was just like, okay, at the beginning of the round, move 19 pieces of cardboard and then make one decision each. All right, next round, move 19 yeah. pieces of cardboard well, and make one decision each.
Really burned my buttons on that one. And that's a phrase I just made up. I'll trademark that. is that there was an app and the app could have taken care of all of that. But no, the app didn't do that. So you had, I think it was like a 7-step turn, and you got to do something in one of those steps. All other six was board management. And that goes to board complexity, I guess. All I know is if a game is going to be complex, and I'm not against complex games. Some of my favorite games are complex games. Gloomhaven is a very complex game. Because of the board management, although now there's a lot of apps and tools and stuff to help manage that. But it's worth it. The payoff is there. With this game, with First Martian, the payoff just wasn't there. The complexity did not justify what I was doing in that game. And I was not willing to give it multiple playthroughs to see if the campaign would fix that because it just, I couldn't do it. I could not do it.
Good rant.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks. Thanks for... stirring that pot. Let's see.
I think complicated games that are good, once you play them, don't feel complicated anymore.
Yep. Yes.
That learning the rules, playing the first time, making those first decisions, yeah, it feels really complicated. But once you play once, twice, depending on the game, you just get it. You understand it. You've learned it. Maybe sometimes people on the first playthrough can grok it. But some people, it takes two or three plays to really understand a game, to really iron out the wrinkles in the rule set, to figure out what all those little symbols on tiles mean, to figure out how the animals score, whatever it is. But once you figure it out, it's just fun. It stops being complicated and it becomes fun. And yeah. if it still feels complicated every time you play it, it's probably too complicated.
Right, which actually leads to Michael's blurb here. He's like, I think designers should strive to streamline as much as possible without compromising the game experience they want. By streamlining, I mean remove any unnecessary complications. But at the end of the day, some complications may be unavoidable for a particular game experience and depth that you're trying to design for, which is okay. Like, complications in a game are completely fine if they're there to make the game more fun, like you said, or to... give the experience the designer's trying to give.
Because if a game isn't complicated, the opposite of complicated to me would be easy. And an easy game is fun for a little bit, but if it's too easy, you're not going to want to play it more than once or twice.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's fun for a once or twice or a party game, something that you play occasionally or even with small children. But an easy game isn't going to stay in my collection for very long. I'm going to get bored with it. It's got to move on.
So Feast for Odin is coming to mind right now. And this game is, it's a double-sized, double-tall box. It's actually a smaller box, but it's a double-tall box. This is a tile placement game, but it's polyomino tiles. So really little things that you're trying to fill up. Essentially, you're trying to fill up this city or world or something. It's an abstract with a slight Greek theme to it. No, Roman? Greek? What's Odin?
Odin is like Norse.
Norse. Okay. With a slight Norse theme to it. There's so many mythologies in the world. So as you're building that up, the action selection board is this huge board. There's so if I had to guess, I'd say there's probably 30 different actions that you can take. And they're different variations of each other. There's a lot of iconography, but it's more pictorial iconography. So you can kind of read from the pictures and imply what is going on there. The game is relatively straightforward, but when you open it up, there's so much in that box. There's so many pieces to deal with, so much stuff. It comes with two plastic trays just so you can organize the pieces to help you set it up. It seems overwhelming and complex. It plays in under an hour, and it's very, very simple. There are so many choices, though. The strategy of the game is insane. So I will say that this game has some rules issues as far as like learning the rules takes quite some time. The board complexity is major. The depth of strategy is significant. There's no real metagame to it besides the fact that, holy crap, there's so many pieces here. But the payoff is worth it. And it's always crazy how complex this game can be when you first start playing it. To play like an hour-long game. Now, the more players you have, and especially when you first play it the first few times, it's definitely going to take 2, possibly 3 hours, depending. But you can get this down to an hour pretty easily. The payoff is there, and it's worth learning that complexity there. Melissa, Arkham Horror, the card game, same thing, promise. But, you know, it's hard to get past that barrier. You know, there's
Melissa, don't listen to Chris.
Traitors.
Living card games are my enemy.
They're my enemy too, but in such a good way.
Yeah, like I think it's the same thing though. Is like you enjoy the continued investment in the constant changing nature of it. Whereas I am like, I don't want to have to buy new things to keep playing this game all the time. And I know that you don't have to keep buying, but like you do. Everyone does. You don't get into a living card game and just play the ones that like were initially out or the set that's current, whatever it is.
You know something? You are right in that we definitely need to talk more about living card games. That's going on the list.
I actually was thinking that because when we were talking, I think about... Oh, I don't remember what it was, but we were talking and I was like, we need to put that on the list.
Yeah, we'll elaborate more on there. Now, I will say that I don't necessarily like buying new cards. I like getting new things. And if I could get them for free, I would do that. I do like organizing cards for some reason. Like I've found like several different organizing methods for all my living card games. And it's just there's something therapeutic about sleeving cards all night long. I don't know. It's like a meditative thing. I don't know. The metagame.
I'll give it to you.
I'm just saying. It's just like it's nice. But then you start looking at them, and what I need to get past is once they're all sleeved and put away, and they're all in their little binders and stuff. I'm like, okay, it's okay to actually take the cards out and play with them. I have a problem. Josh is just staring at me like, yes, you do.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you have many game related habit problems and addictions, but that's fine. You know, it's all fun.
So, Josh, what kind of complexity? So I guess we've already kind of covered your two kinds. You like the complexity of strategy.
Yeah, but the thing that I keep coming back to in my mind is that you know, in a very deep strategy game, the outcome of my strategy and the goals are kind of seem very obvious to me. Like, you know, when I'm in a game of chess, I have to defend my pieces and attack their pieces and take the king. And you know, there are endless branching moves that I can do and they can do. But if I'm thinking through what the other person's likely to do, there are strong moves that are obvious and there are weak moves that are obvious. So I'm like, okay. And there's ways to protect myself that seem obvious to me. But in a game like Scythe, it's like, I don't know how this person is going to like play. Like there's 5 different ways they can go and try and collect points. And there's 5 different ways that I can go and collect points. And I don't even know how long this game is going to last because it could be 5 turns or it could be 10 turns because someone might trigger an end condition at a certain point. And I'm like, oh, well, my strategy was sort of gearing up for a 10 turn kind of game. And it's like, that's what gets me. It's just like, it's not obvious to me, the outcomes and like where to go with the strategies. And I'm just like, but with games like chess, it's like, it seems so obvious to me.
Sydney is the worst at ending games early. Always. If there's a strategy where it's like, I'm going to rush to finish the game, she is always the one who takes that. But more to the point, I never really put that together, but it's exactly now I can like separate games into two categories. It's the one objective game with complex ways to get to the one objective versus a multiple objective game where you're scoring points based on any choices and you don't like.
I can't stand the multiple objectives.
Or picking the one objective to stick with.
I can't pick one, and it's like I don't even know which one's going to end up being optimal, and that annoys me. And it's like, ugh.
Whereas the one objective game, I feel like for me, it's too easy to see what everyone is doing to get towards that objective. Mm. It's too much open information on the board, easily gained, easily thought out into future steps, which that's not my strength.
Yes.
I'm not good at abstracting out from the current board state.
Right.
I like looking at the complicated kind of messy board and just having my choices that make sense for my strategy. And I don't have to worry about what everyone's doing because it's my actions towards my goal that are going to win me the game.
Right. Yeah. That's so interesting because it's like, I think that's it. Like me not being able to read really what other people are up to or even what I should be up to, like really messes with my head for some reason.
So how many games are you guys willing to give before you give up on a complicated game? So like Scythe, for example.
Yeah.
You've played it maybe twice, two or three times?
Yeah, 2 or 3 times, max.
And each time you play it, there's like a significant gap of time between that. Yeah. You know, let's just put it down. We should play My Little Scythe, by the way. That's a super streamlined version. Like it's quite fun.
Yes.
It's inspired by, it is not Scythe, but
yeah.
My Little Scythe, awesome. Like, okay. I really, really like this game. But that was an aside. My Little Scythe is a non-complicated game for Scythe, which can be considered by many as a complicated game.
Mm.
If you were to play that game every week for, you know, 6 months.
Yeah.
Do you think you would have a better understanding of what it is? Would it become less complicated? Would you have a better idea of how to win, how to deal with whatever the other opponents are going to do?
It would. I think there just seems to be a lot of ambiguity. With a game like chess or Homeworlds, it feels more laser focused. It just feels like with a game like Scythe or games of that ilk, it's just like, you don't really know what the hell is going to happen. And in my mind, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you're right. Maybe after the 10th play, I would have it down pat and be like, oh yeah, they're trying to do this and I'm trying to do that. And it would be obvious, but I'm skeptical. I think there's just too many, like Kitty said, there's too many different objectives and it's kind of split up. And for some reason, my mind doesn't like that. It's like, no, there should be one. And we should just be striving for that one singular, very focused goal.
So we're getting towards the end of the year, sort of-ish. And I think we need to start thinking about our 10x10 or something like that for the next year. And I think for us as a podcast, we should each pick 2 games. And we are going to play one of them every time we record. Yeah.
So we're going to have a 6x10.
Yes.
I like that.
And that way, we will actually get through some of these. And I know we said that last year, but Chris was the only one who actually put one together and put thought into it. But I think if we each 2 games is easy enough to pick.
Yeah.
And then we can look at these different kinds of complexity and maybe see if playing it on a very regular basis, you can kind of turn those multiple objectives into one goal. Because there is just one goal in almost all those games, points. And it's score points.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, it's to score money. Like, Scythe is pretty simple. It doesn't necessarily have points. It has you need to have as much money as you can at the end of the game.
Yeah, yeah, but everything else converts into money. Mm. It's just using money as a stand-in for victory points.
But it, because money is the stand-in for victory points, you can go on a strictly, I'm going to earn money in the game, not pay attention to anything else that's going to give me money at the end, and I could still win with a money for a strategy.
Sure.
Almost all games that have victory points will convert money into them. It's like a little bit different, the ratios every time, but you can always go with a, I'm just going to pick one strategy and go with it, and that will get you some points. It's when you, but I don't think it'll always win you the game.
No, I just think Scythe has a little bit more emphasis on that money because it's a one for one.
Sure.
But I want to, like, you're talking about multiple goals. You guys are both fans of Risk. Is Risk a single goal thing? Like, because to me, Risk is still a very unpredictable board state. Like, all kinds of things are happening here. Are you still thinking that as a one goal thing? Or are you thinking of it as a big picture? I have to worry about what you're doing over here. I have to worry about what they're doing over there.
I think I see it more like a chess type game in the sense that, you know, yes, the board state at any one point can be complicated. But really, I just need to kill you.
Okay.
Like, that's all I need to do.
That's the goal.
Yeah.
It's a very straightforward goal, but I like it because there's enough chance, enough randomness that it doesn't feel to me like my inability to always foresee events is a huge detriment. There's an element of luck that is allowing me that. And also, it is a game I've been playing since I was like 9 years old or something, and my cousin Josh sat down and made me play this game because they needed a third player to make it work between him and my sister. And so I've been playing it for years and years and years. So the strategy is like ingrained within me. I can't not know how to play Risk. I can like leave it for a decade, come back to it and be like, I know how to play this game and I know how to win this game.
All right. Most complicated games you've played in recent memory? Like, Josh, like, of games I've made you play, because I'm almost certain that's going to be what it is. What is the most complicated game that you have played where it's just like, that was more than I was bargaining for?
The thing is, you've done... Weirdly, that's kind of a tough question, because I think you've done quite well that we haven't played too many of those types of games in recent memory. Yeah, I mean, the same ones I was mentioning earlier, I think. I think, you know, just any sort of really heavy Euro game, I think.
Okay.
With multiple objectives.
Which is interesting, and it's good to know, because I think Euro games, a lot of them, are actually super simple games.
Mm.
There is depth in strategy in most, but the rule system, like the turns you can take and how it plays out, relatively straightforward for the rules.
They're all multiple objective.
Yeah.
All of them.
That's why I don't.
That is like almost definition of a Euro game is multiple objective.
At least multiple ways to get those points that scores you victory.
And that's what messes with me.
Yeah. What about you, Kitty?
Power Grid.
Yeah. All right.
I think it was maybe just that I didn't like it. And so I thought it felt complicated, but I didn't like it. And it felt like there was just unnecessary complication, maybe, that, like, I really did not like the auctioning mechanic. And so that made it feel like I should just be able to buy this thing. This feels unnecessarily complicated. It makes it take longer for, like, no reason. And I didn't like it.
So there's a certain level of, if you're not having fun and the game is in any level complicated, it makes it feel like it's too complicated and it's not worth it.
Yes.
Yeah. So it kind of comes full circle there. No, I definitely get that.
I would also put Concordia on the more complicated games we've played recently. I'm not trying to pick on the games that we played for the Euro Games episode, but I feel like those are actually the only games we've kind of played very recently.
Yeah, Concordia seemed pretty straightforward to me simply because the choices were limited and then like all the rules were on the cards, essentially.
I think anything feels more complicated when you are holding a 7-month-old baby.
Yeah, I'll give you that. Well, and that's actually a good point to bring up as well, is complications depend on your mood, where you're at, how much time and mental energy you can invest in something. Like, there's been a lot of times where I'm like, I want to play this game. I open up the box, I look at the rule book, and then I put it back. You know, we talked about on Kickstarter a few weeks ago, the review of Dungeon Alliance.
Yeah.
A game that feels very complicated. It in the end, it's not actually complicated, but it feels like it is. So the number of times I opened that box and just put it back away was a lot. Because just kind of getting past that barrier, I needed to be in the right mindset in order to get past that barrier. Other games like, you know, I think the Game of Thrones card game is a complicated game. It's complicated on many, many levels. Now, I enjoy it quite a bit now that I've gotten into it, but it's still very slow for me to play right now because every time we play a new faction or whatever, I have to like read every single card in my hand and figure out how that interacts with every card on the other side of the board. And eventually that goes away. The more you play it, the more that complexity fades away, and then just you're just playing the game. Fortunately for me, I guess, or the game, I guess, I see the game as being very, very fun. I really enjoy playing the game, and I look forward to learning more and more about the ins and outs of that game. So I like it. But I also wouldn't necessarily teach it to you. I wouldn't drop you guys. There's two ways to play this game. There's Joust, which is the one-on-one, and then there's Melee, which is you can play up to like 8 players. I could give you pre-built decks, and I'm like, okay, we're going to play this Melee. The game's a little bit different. It feels a little bit more like a board game. Never in a million years would I do that to people that weren't like hardcore into the world, at least, where they were willing to invest that time to say, wait a minute, I have to read basically one of the books in order to understand what my deck's going to do, because there's so many words on everybody's cards.
Those books are so heavy.
Yeah, I haven't.
That's read the why books. I bought a Kindle.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Way back in the day when I actually read those books, and he actually kept writing those books.
I'm more than happy with the HBO series. Totally fine with that. But the card game is really, really good. Okay. Do we have anything else to say about complicated games?
No, it's all gotten too complicated.
Complicated doesn't mean not fun.
No.
No, that's true.
But it can also mean that, too.
Yep.
It can,
if you're a dummy
but
like
it
me.
It doesn't mean it.
Yeah. Well, complicated, I think, it is different for everybody.
And it's complicated.
Yeah. And I think people enjoy certain levels of complexity in our games and our relationships. Because I really do feel that there has to be a little bit there that stresses you in order to be, when you overcome it, you feel a sense of accomplishment.
Exactly. Yes.
And that is why we have to have some complexity in our games. It's just finding that right amount.
That's very true.
All right. Let's see. Another reminder that we'll be at Essen in October. Gamehole Con in November. And as long as I can swing it, I'll have to check with Alex, who runs the con. I need to make sure I can actually put things up for sale at our table. But as long as I can, I'm going to bring a whole bunch of really cheap games so people can get rid of some of my collection for me. And if you want to follow us on Facebook, we're at Tabletop Game Talk Podcast. If you want to follow us on Twitter, we're at Tabletop Game TLK. Kitty is on Twitter at Lawful Good Mom. Josh is Josh's Blonde. I am Game Master Chris. And if you want to support us, you can go to tabletopgametalk.com/Patreon. Our patrons are automatically entered in a gift card drawing on all our feedbacks. And they also support us and allow us to have addictions and, you know, keep the bills paid and all that kind of stuff. We really do like appreciate our patrons. This is why we read their names every single episode. And, you know, we talked a little bit about taking that off, but we don't want to. So if you want to be on this list that we're going to read in a second, tabletopgametalk.com/Patreon. That's P-A-T-R-E-O-N.
All right. Tabletop Game Talk is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. Thanks for listening. And remember, we love your feedback. So email us with comments or questions about today's topic at feedback@tabletopgametalk.com. And you'll be entered into a $50 gift card drawing on our next feedback episode.
Which is our next episode. So you have 1 week to get this feedback in, maybe 5 days. So email us quick.
Yep. And finally, a huge thank you to our patrons, Emil Giljam, George, Adam Harrison, Corey Bell, the SGC,
Samir Biswas, Jason Strong, Terrence Miltner, Stephen Seitz. Michael O, Brian Arnold, Sean B. Kelly, Daniel Shepard,
C. Marie, Rudy Liu, Benjamin Heimowitz, Jerry Wong, Stefan, this Josh's brother, Philip, Caleb O'Brien, Jennifer Aderbite, Justin Willard, Christopher Dogg,
Jason Marks, Jeremy Fisher, Kyle Hammond, David Radke, Lance Morgan, Nick Quickstra, David Sellers, Jason Rodney, Michael Yanikowski, Miles Clark,
Cindy Lum, Phil Swartzwell, Jordan Livingston, Zoe Ng, Chad Covey, Anne Reynolds, Eric Huffman, Adrian Dong,
Christopher Vincent, Nate Faz Quintham, Sean Peck, Eric Solander, Adam, I'm never going to get your name right,
Cripples,
Mike Smith, Kristen Meyer, Trevor Davis, Wesley Taylor, Trailer,
Tim Vernon, Chris Lowe, Joe Hoover, and Timothy Gross.
Until next week, keep playing games and having fun. So I have this game store that opened up down the street from me. They a couple of months ago now, and they have this like reward program. And so I went in there, and he's like, "Oh, you have 3 points, and for 2 points, you can roll a d20 and get a discount." So I was buying a whole bunch of Game of Thrones cards, and I'm like, "Oh, okay, sure." He's like, 2 points. I'm like, "All right." So you roll a d20, and if you roll a 1, you don't get any discount. If you roll like a 5 through 14, you get 5%, and then 15 through 19, 10%, and 20 is a 20. So I roll a 5. He's like, "You know, for 1 more point, you can roll again." I'm like, "Well, I have 3. I might as well roll." And then I roll a 20, and that was actually pretty cool because I got 30% off all my cards because you get a normal 10% off too. And that reminds me, if anyone wants to play a game with me at any time, well, working hours might be tricky, but I can usually make it work. The Gift of Games in Grays Lake, northeastern Illinois. Just let me know and I'll meet you there.
Practically Wisconsin.
Practically Wisconsin. That's what we call the county.